This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo, Baseball Outside the Box. Thanks for joining us this evening, 6 p.m. Central, here in Chicago, in our Chicago studios. I want to welcome everybody in the U.S. and around the world. Thanks for joining us on live on Facebook, Twitter, and also on Zoom. We're going to have coaches on Zoom. You'll be able to ask any question like of Mr. Anthony Sanders. What a great guy to have on the show today. First base coach for the Baltimore Orioles, the big league club. He's got 14 seasons. He's managing the minors with the Rockies. He's the gold medal coach in the 2000 Olympics. But he's got, you know, former major league player, got a tremendous background. We don't need to waste any time because we want to get right into the show and listen to what he has to say. So first of all, let me welcome our good friend, Anthony Sanders. What's up, Anthony?
Be good. Thanks for having me on, buddy. I'm doing good.
Are you kidding? Hey, one thing I never asked you, I should have asked you before we even started. You like Anthony? You like Tony? What do you like?
Anthony's good.
Okay, Anthony's good. All right, cool. So our audience knows, you know, I got a chance to meet you a couple times when you were at Team USA. And one thing I realized right away is that you're so personable. You know, you didn't even know who I was pretty much. And, you know, you talked to me, you know, you came over, said hi, you went out of your way. And I think that's part of, I think, what makes you a great communicator with people.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I first met you overseas in Japan, I mean, you could tell, you know, the good people when you see them. And, you know, I do that. I'm honored to serve the United States, to coach the Olympic team. And I just want those kids to have the same memories I had when I got an opportunity to do it back in 2000 with Lasorda. And it's a special time. And I just want to get the most out of it.
You know what? And that's something that we will get into because Tommy Lasorda, when I was with the Italian American Sports Hall of Fame here in the National, he was the national spokesman for the Hall of Fame here in Chicago. I never really got a chance. I got a chance to meet him, but not really talk to him much. And I'll bet just being with him, because from what I understand, everything you hear about him, one, he's real confident. And two, he's a motivator. You want to run through the wall playing for him.
Yeah, that's the one thing I take away from my experience with Tommy, just the great motivator. Everyone knows, we are big underdogs, a lot of young minor league players without major league experience at the time. And, you know, we are backed up against the wall, and he just made everybody on that team believe that we had a chance and that we belong there. And everyone just kind of followed his lead.
Well, he had to believe because he came out in the papers and said, give me the Olympic team and I'll win the gold. And that's exactly what he did. I remember that statement. I was like, wow, I mean, that's incredible. But, you know, again, great. I mean, and here's a guy that pitched like four games in the big leagues and he's a Hall of Fame manager. I mean, one of the best in the business.
Yeah, it is. Just his presence, just being around him and just trying to soak up anything you can from him. But just the confidence he has and the experience. As a young kid, you got to be crazy not to listen and follow his lead.
Hey, we happen to get into this, so I was going to start with something else, but this is what's great about the show, because you brought that up, Lasorda. But because then we're going to get into your career, too. With Lasorda, when, you know, how was he on the bench, you know, when guys were down? How did he, you know, what did he do to kind of pump them up a little bit?
Yeah, just with how the Olympics goes, I mean, with the round robins, I mean, you can lose one and still have a chance, and he just never was down, always upbeat, joking around, you know, had different things in the dugout to, you know, kind of let all the young kids just relax and play. But, you know, he took all the media, took all the pressure off us with the media and everything else and, you know, the Olympics. And so he knew what he was doing. He was a professional and he knew what we were up against and that nobody really believed in us but him. And, you know, things worked out.
Yeah, and, you know, and obviously he, you know, being – the big league manager and also being so confident. Yeah, he just portrayed that air about himself that he was confident. But let's get into you. That's the most important thing. That's what the show's all about. And if anytime we talk, you want to mention something that you learned from Lasorda, great, because I think that could help our coaches. But what I'd like to do is, you got some kids playing baseball. Now, earlier on, you guys were in. You know, I had to stay home, obviously. Now, Arizona, you're able to go out a little bit, practice with your kids. Early on, what'd you do with your kids at home to kind of prepare them when they go outside and what positions they play?
Yeah, I was fortunate because, some years ago I built a batting cage in my backyard. So I have a freshman in college at Colorado Mesa, a junior in high school, and a freshman. All pretty good athletes. They've been clubhouse kids. And, they haven't stopped working out. And I got a good buddy of mine who gave me a key to a gym. So we go in there at midnight lifts when everybody's out. So it's been really good that I get to spend time with my family. But, they go out with their friends now slowly, wearing masks and stuff like that. But it's been a change, in a good way for the family.
What's your concern for them and when they start playing? In other words, when games start rolling up? I know they're going to have some practices, I'm sure, with their teams. But what's your major concern?
That's just unfortunate, just from my nephews and from Little League, from Little League World Series to high school baseball to recruiting. Everyone's affected by this. So, I think until Major League Baseball gets going again, I think everything else is going to kind of be on hold. And I think everybody will start things up when it's time. So I don't think they're going to miss much. But, again, I just feel bad for a lot of those kids who are last year in Little League or last year in high school. Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, it is. And hopefully we'll get started pretty soon. Now, what about your big league guys? Have you been talking to some of those guys? They're working out, obviously. I know pitching is going to be a concern. They got to be ready, obviously physically and all that. But position players got it ready. You don't want guys getting hurt. I know you're going to have spring training. But what's been the communication with maybe your players and also the staff?
Yeah, I think every professional coach now understands what a Zoom call is now.
And yeah.
I'm in charge of obviously the outfielders and base running and just making sure guys are safe and slowly have a place to work out, letting them know some target dates that may be thrown out there. Nothing's in concrete yet. And just making sure they're staying active and not just, sitting on the couch.
A lot of communication between your manager and the coaching staff?
Yeah, we usually have a Zoom call once a week, and we try to find different creative ways to keep growing. If it's, scouting or developing with some of the minor league coaches or new to the system. And so it's been positive.
Hey, before we get into your position, your role as far as first base coach, you're an outfield instructor, base running instructor. What about when you were younger, because you made it to the big leagues, and it's not an easy task. The percentages are pretty low when you're talking about the number of players out there worldwide now. What did Anthony Sanders, what got you to the big leagues, you think? What early on in your young career, when you were a young kid, some of the things that you learned that helped you later on?
I think it all starts with my family, very good upbringing, good parents, some brothers and sisters that were very competitive with them, and, just always competing in football and baseball and basketball, playing tons of different sports. And, football was my love coming out of high school, and I ended up getting drafted by the Blue Jays and ended up signing early and coming out of high school. So I think a lot of the life lessons I've learned on other fields have helped me in baseball to grow and understand competing.
Hey, guys and gals that joined us, feel free anytime to write on the chat a question. Or if you want, we can go ahead and unmic. You can unmic your mic and ask the question directly. But we're going to get into some specifics to coaching. But I wanted to address because, as a young player, you're moving up through the ranks. You gotta, there's a lot of competition. You're trying to battle your way all the way up to the, to the major leagues. Not an easy task. What do you think, because we talked about this a lot on the show, multi-sport athletes. Here you are, a football player. How much did that help you into developing into a baseball player?
Yeah, it did, especially playing quarterback, just being able to, the leadership part of it. But again, I couldn't have made it as far as I could have without my family and some of the great coaches I've had along the way. I think every single coach from Little League through high school through pro ball has impacted my career in a positive way. So just taking bits and pieces, what I think will help me and lead me in the right direction is kind of stuff that I've taken and ran with.
All right, man. Let's jump right into the position. You're first base coach. Now, you manage a lot in the minors. Now you're first base coach. Talk about the responsibilities on the field that a first base coach. Everybody thinks, you just put somebody at first base. And later on, we're going to talk about your Japan experience, too, as a player. Because just to give you an example, as you know, in Japan, in the high school championships, the actual high school players coach the bases, something I like, and we could talk about that later. But as a first base coach, you know, what's your, you know, because everybody thinks it's just, well, just tell them the outs, just tell them a couple things, and that's it. You're ready to go.
No, it's a lot of the preparation beforehand. The ultimate goal is for when someone gets on first base, if they trust the information that you have and there's a relationship built and, you know, that their instincts can just take over from there. But behind the scenes, as far as the video, breaking down pitchers, you know, teaching kids how to, what to look for, you know, a lot of the tendencies that go on throughout the game that some people may not realize, because I know there's a lot of coaches on here right now, and half the time you're sitting over there at third base and watching third base coach give signs, half these kids don't remember the signs.
Right. So
just reminders and just getting to know your players is probably the biggest key.
Hey, speaking about signs, you know, that's a great point. You're going to have, you know, I had some guys in AAA that, you know, AAA players, I should say, in independent ball. I remember them forgetting the signs. They come to first base and they forgot the sign. What you don't have a whole lot of time. What's the way to communicate if that player at first doesn't, you know what the sign is? How do you get it to him without the first baseman hearing it either?
And most of the time you're putting your hand on him, squeezing his shoulder or giving him something. But again, it all goes back to learning your players, understanding what kids need what. You're not out there to try to confuse anybody. You want to put each kid in the best situation for them and for them to succeed. So a lot of different learning styles out there in the game of baseball. And like I said, it all comes back down just to knowing your players and how to relate to them.
So you spend a lot of time watching video, understanding pitchers, knowing catchers. Explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, just tendencies. I think everything kind of starts off the pitcher when you talk about your leads and, you know, times the plate and guys you can run on, guys you can take advantage of, you know, and if, you know, you get nothing on the pitcher, you might want to go to something else. Maybe the catcher's giving something away, you know, some signs you could steal or how he sets up. Or, and then some things just go back to gut feeling. When a manager gives a steal sign or hit and run, he just has that gut feeling that, you know, this is a good situation to do it with. And that's just through experience and understanding the game a little bit.
And when you're talking about signs, there's times where the first base, third base coach might pick up some signs from the catcher, you know, if he's given up a sign or he's given it away. Then there's communication to the hitter. Can that come from either coach in your system, the communication, if you do pick up a certain sign for a certain pitch?
Yeah, I mean, the game's played a lot of different ways. Sometimes everything's controlled through the manager, then to the third base coach. Some first base coaches control the running game. So it all just depends on the confidence you have in each one of your staff members. But again, with the base running, I think it starts at a younger age with a lot of these kids, from the club ball to college ball to who's controlling the game, how aggressive you're letting some of these kids be, letting them, you know, fail a little bit and learning from that, instead of just managers just controlling the running game and, you know, guys only going when the coaches say to go.
Now, a lot of clubs, obviously, you know, when the ball's in front of a player, the player has that ability to make that decision probably quicker than anybody. But sometimes a ball, even a ball hit down the left field line, in the line, sometimes that player can't turn around and look. Are you communicating with them? And how's that, some of that communication working out as far as going to second?
Yeah, at our level now, a lot of these kids have been taught, you know, when to pick up the baseball, when not to. But, you know, for some of the younger coaches, you have a lot more time on the field to be creative. And like you mentioned earlier in Japan, with some of the young kids coaching the bases, you know, I've used that as a tool before, letting those kids understand, you know, how fast the game is. And, you know, if the guys aren't running their best speed and kind of where to stand and where to pick up the base coaches. So a lot of this is simulated through different types of drills when it comes to base running.
What's your technique when it comes to, because you see a lot of coaches, they don't just sit there in one area in the box. You know, balls hit to a certain area, they seem to move somewhere else. There's an infield ball being thrown, they seem to move somewhere also. They're not usually standing still all the time. What's the technique background there?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I was fortunate to be a supervisor with the Rockies, kind of a new position that they put out there. And there was times where I was in the dugout, times when I was in the stands, and I got to actually sit up there and just watch our coaches on the bases and, you know, and be able to help them develop as well of where they're supposed to stand and go over video with them and stuff like that. And the game just really slowed down for me at that point. But it just takes experience of guys getting over there. I encourage a lot of these young coaches who maybe get stuck at first base to maybe swap every now and then, since you guys play so many games, and get over there and coach third base and understand, you know, because the game gets fun over there.
You know, I wish I can get stuck as a big league first base coach because I take it in a second with no problem. you know, the and because what I mean, what a great honor just to be in the big leagues and coaching, managing. And you know, I believe both positions, third and first, are extremely important. They play a role. As you're saying, there's a lot of preparation and all that. I remember my first time going to third base in pro ball. Man, I was scared to death, you know, and I was like, you know, I had to give the signs. I had to get the signs from the manager and all that. Jay Pesci, first base coach, he's a first base coach in the minors. And he does ask, you know, what's some advanced tips for coaching first base? But I'm going to lead it in with this. If you're going to be a first base coach, let's say this young man who's going to be for the first time in the minors, he might be coaching first base. What do you recommend to get better before you even hit the field?
Yeah, I think it's just preparing not only yourself, but, you know, the ball player as far as what to look for when he's out there. Understanding his abilities, starting from scratch, I think once you can teach a kid the confidence of getting the lead with confidence getting back, then I think that you have a better chance of going the other way. I think a lot of times guys are scared to steal a run because they're not confident that they can get back to the base. So I think there's a lot of creative ways of standing up, diving back, figuring out what's best for that player at the time. And then after that, just, you know, there's a first base coach has a big job. I mean, the way he communicates, the information that he gives the player, but ultimately it's the confidence he gives in that player when he's over at first base.
Would you recommend, I don't know if this makes any sense, you know, even take a look at that video. I mean, we're watching games, you know, and maybe even – calling guys up that, you know, have experience and asking them, you know, hey, coaching first base, what's some of the things I should be doing? Because maybe he's not as familiar with it.
Yeah, it's just constant reminders. Like I said, you can have meetings before the game about signs and, you know, check the outfielders with all the shifts going on in baseball now with the infielders. It's just constant reminding these guys because the game moves fast for them. You might think they have it all, but it's just constant reminders of telling them situations, number of outs, looking for the ball in the dirt. This guy loves to bounce his off-speed pitches, loves to, you know, when he's ahead, just different reminders like that.
Hey, you hear this a lot. I mean, you yell back, you know, as a coach at first base or wherever the verbal cue might be. Problem is, a lot of times, I mean, you know, by the time the brain reacts to that, you're probably picked off anyways. I mean, I think that's more for possibly – keeping the guys on the bench at the younger levels more into the game when they yell back. But as far as helping, I mean, it never helped me when I was a runner.
Yeah, and for sure, that's something that should be studied before the game. You should know if a guy has a plus move or not. And, you know, especially with all the games that are played now, there's tons of information out there on these guys. You know, you see a lot of hitters after the game, they'll go with the hitting coach and they'll check out their swings, if they're striking out or the ball they hit hard. But will they actually keep watching that video to – you know, when there's a guy on first base or second, to see some tendencies of the pitcher.
You know, I remember, and this probably isn't a big deal, but I remember how many times I might have told a player at first, hey, you know, you got a man, you're on first and first baseman's behind you. I got you, but, you know, be ready. And you know, especially in your secondary, don't be stuck out there because they'll pick you behind. And there's a pro guy, and I just reminded him, and then a pitch later he gets picked off. And then, you know, It's a tough feeling for the first base coach because, you know, everybody's looking at first base coach and it's not the first base coach's fault. How do you deal with that with a player?
Yeah, that happened to me in this last Olympics over there when I saw you over in Japan and Mexico. I was over at first base and, you know, we have all these top prospects from all the organizations, but we don't have much time to spend with these kids. And you would just assume sometimes that, you know, they know what they're doing over there. And that happened to me. I got my back turned towards a catcher and, you know, I reminded the guy early in the count, and then next thing you know, back pick the first base, he's out, and that's a long walk back in the dugout for me, and everyone looking at me like that's my fault, but, you know, that's part of the game.
What's the toughest move to deal with on a pitcher, left-handed, right-hander? What's the toughest move that you've seen that, you know, is really tough to get a jump on?
I think over time, it's just these guys reading left-handers, because I think for a long time, everyone's just taught to go first move on a lefty. And, you know, at the big league level, that's probably, you know, one of the best ways to go because you have an idea and some keys on him. But just for a lot of the younger kids, high school, even college kids, there's so many lefties that give certain things away. if you really take the time to break them down, if it's looking at, you know, their feet, their leg, their head, or whatever, some tendencies, that jab step that you always see people take, a jab step back, you know, I just think that's a – I'd rather them shorten their lead and not take that step. That way they have a chance to continue to read, even if they're having a one-way lead. So there's just a lot of creative ways just to build confidence and teach these kids, you know, how to possibly read a lefty instead of just going on first move.
How do you teach the secondary? What are the keys to a secondary when it comes, especially at the higher levels? Because they can catch and throw pretty good.
That's been a debate, you know, for years of, you know, how many shuffles. People try to write it down, one shuffle, two shuffle. But again, everything goes back to that pitcher. If he slide steps, you know, then that shuffle may turn into one shuffle. You know, if he has a big leg kick, you may need to let the play develop with a couple. But again, the whole point for me is when the ball's crossing the plate, you want to be in a good athletic position to react, especially if there's a ball in the dirt, to cross over and go. So, you know, there's a variety of things, and it all depends on the athlete.
Is a mistake some guys make possibly at times that they get into their secondary and they seem to stop and then have to restart again?
Yeah, and a lot of it's just focus too. A lot of them are, you know, still over there messing with their batting gloves or looking in the stands, and then the next play happens and they're caught off guard. So that's what it says. The first base coach is constant reminders of these guys, especially if you got a guy who does bounce a lot of pitches and, you know, taking a look at what the outfielders are. So, I mean, it's funny because you get in practice and you put the whole team out there and everybody does it perfect. And the lights come on and, you know, things change. So.
And I know at the big league level, the guys are a little bit better at it. I mean, they've got a lot more experience than most guys. You know, but what's a good system? Because as you just said, you know, they do it well in practice and then all of a sudden in the game it doesn't happen. What do we need to change to possibly make that a better system to where some of it transfers more than it does?
No, I think it all starts with the coaches. I've been fortunate, you know, it's my first spring training with the Orioles, and coming in, I really had no relationship with anybody on the staff other than, you know, one of the bullpen coach. And, Brandon Hyde, the manager, really had focused on this all off season, coming to spring training, and was just out front on a lot of the base running issues that we've had last year and moving to this year. So when the manager, you know, has your back and the team knows that, the importance of it, it makes my job a lot easier, you know, and that's kind of what we've created early on in spring training. And, you know, it's unfortunate we had to stop a couple weeks before, but, you know, that's going to still continue to be one of our big focus points and moving forward.
Are there some things that Major League Baseball is changing when it comes to maybe some myths of base running or some techniques that they used to teach in the past, but maybe it's changed now? I know Joe Maddon is big on, you know, he always brings it up, the cardinal, you know, everybody talks about the cardinal sin, don't make the first or third out of third base. Well, he doesn't believe in that, and he's been quoted many times, and he's talked about why. But are some things that you'd like to see changed?
Yeah, I think we're off to the right path. And, you know, I've always been taught, you know, with the Rockies organization is, you know, we were overly aggressive and, you know, we learn, you know, by our mistakes. But, you know, hopefully when the kids get to the big league level or higher levels, they have confidence that, you know, they can go first or third or go on dirt balls and stuff like that. So I think we're going in the right direction. It just depends on the manager and the type of baseball they want to play. I think the stolen bases are probably down in baseball. There's a lot of factors to that. You know, pitchers are not having to get a sign anymore to slide step and control a running game. I mean, it's just what they do now. You know, catchers are throwing better. So we have to find different creative ways to maybe get some momentum going when we steal bases, take advantage of the opportunities when they're there.
You know, it's interesting you said that because Victor Castillo just asked, you know, what do you think is the main reason about that there aren't as many stolen bases in the big leagues nowadays, since the players are more athletic? Some of it's got to be the statistics also.
Yeah. And you know, the home runs that come in, you know, especially in Colorado, I mean, sometimes you don't want to run yourself out of the game because, you know, one swing of the bat can change the ball game there. So again, it's just different philosophies, but you know, that's one thing I would love to see happen in baseball is just the way we draft, you know, start getting some more athletes and guys who can actually run. I think it's almost being a lost art.
You know, in your teaching, you got base running, you've got outfield play. You know, As far as, let's get into outfield play, because I think we can always go back to, I want to get to Japan in a minute, but when it comes to outfield play, what are some of the key areas with your outfield that you're teaching that might have maybe changed from the past? Again, I'm trying to always think, you know, what we taught sometimes 20 years ago, a lot of it's still pretty good, but some of it needs to be changed. Is there anything when it comes to outfield play?
Yeah, it's again, everything I've been taught by other coaches and players and stuff is kind of what I give the kids and through experience. I don't think there's nothing I'm doing that recreates a wheel other than, you know, just the passion I have for the game and for the outfield and base running and the detail. And, you know, the players that have had me before, you know what I expect, know how we communicate, know how we back up. And a lot of the coaches who are on here, it's basically just playing the game the right way. But I think the practice time and the drills – what kind of separate, you know, the mentality of the type of players we have.
You know, Tom, it was interesting. Tom Soteris online, I was just about to say, hey, Tom needs to ask a question since he knows you. And he typed one up, and I'm going to get to it in a second. But before I do that, you know, I was in Cuba, and we're talking with some of the Cuban coaches there, and the question that came up in Cuba is always, you know, in the outfield, there's several techniques. You know, there's times possibly you feel the ball in front of you. There's some to the side. There's other techniques that they use. What can you kind of elaborate on some of that?
Yeah, that's been a big one is, you know, do you field it out front? Do you field it with your leg back? And to me, I think you need to teach both. I think at the end of the day, when it's do or die and someone needs to throw somebody out, you know, the player's going to go to what he feels comfortable. I think if it was a younger kid, I would like to have him catch it out front if it's a right-handed throw of his left leg, just because I don't think the momentum, he slows himself down. I think when you do it both ways, you can visually see, you know, which way the player slows down to gather himself. And both plays come in mind. If you don't have a fast runner and you need the plays to develop, you can take more time or a field that snakes a little bit. So there's just a lot of different ways to teach it, but I would definitely make sure the outfielders know how to do it both ways to adjust to a hop.
You know, and yeah, because that might even go to, depending where you're playing, you might have to go to one knee at times. You see some guys going to one knee, you know, but yet you have some coaches tell you never go to one knee. And I'm not really sure that you never do something. I mean, maybe it's better, you, like you said, know how to do several things so that, because those might come up.
Yeah. And again, it's just knowing the situation beforehand, you know, just communicating. I am really big on teaching the guys how to go back on the ball, having the ability to drop your head and go to a spot. So a lot of different creative ways to simulate that through fungos or machines. Again, it all comes back to how each coach runs his drill, you know, doing it at game speed, not just going, because anybody can catch a fly ball. You know, it's just, you always ask yourself, could you tag on that outfielder, you know, and go from there.
You know, one of the toughest plays is the ball hit right at you. And there's, you know, again, several techniques that have been taught in the past. How do you work with your players? Because like you said, a fly ball, most guys, at least at the higher level, should be fairly easy. But what about the line drives or coming off a left-handed hitter or right-handed hitter that's slicing? How do you teach that?
Yeah, and that play, you know, before the play happens, understanding who's throwing, the type of hitter, watching the bat path. But, you know, the hardest ball probably in the outfield to catch is that hard line drive that eats guys up, where guys, you know, stand straight up or take a step back instead of maybe staying low, getting sideways, and then making an adjustment from there. So, you know, that's kind of hard to simulate, you know, unless you can, you know, get a machine at home plate and shoot some hard line drives or, you know, have a coach, you know, hit off a tee or some fungos at them. But, sure. You know, the just not to panic and not to just stand straight up, because sometimes you stand straight up and then it's over, the ball's over you.
You know, and I was thinking too, you know, Anthony Sanders, I'm assuming you had pretty good speed. You were a quarterback. You probably ran pretty good.
A little bit. Run a little bit.
You know, which now sometimes, you know, if you run really well, sometimes it's like, you know, sometimes your speed makes up for some mistakes, but you see a lot of young kids, you know, they kind of react after the ball's hit. Talk about what young kids should be doing so they can get a better jump on the ball.
Yeah, when I was brought up, I mean, I played like Andrew Jones, but as a young kid, when I first signed out of high school with Toronto back in 92, you know, I had a time to watch Devon White. And I tell a lot of my kids now, like, do you remember who Devon White is? and half of them don't even know who it is, and they have to YouTube him. But, you know, Devon used to go back there and catch balls up here on his chest, but it all started with his first step. You know, a lot of these guys who have speed, like you said, tend to just use their makeup speed at the very end instead of, you know, getting to that spot and making it look easy. It almost looked like these guys used to hot dog it, but, you know, they were really good because they got out of the box.
Hey, let's jump to some questions here. Tom Satur says, when you're watching a video on a right-handed pitcher, what are the most common cues for pitchers you see for a base stealer? So what are they focusing on?
Some common stuff. I mean, you'll see a lot of these pitchers who just get in the same rhythm. Like someone will go up and they'll take a deep breath and just get into certain patterns. You know, you watch your shoulders. You know, you can watch sometimes, you know, their feet, depending on which one moves first. Some will actually lean. But, you know, with all the technology you have now, you can really slow things down and give these kids some confidence of the right thing to look at before you actually get on the base. So the bases are pretty much stolen before you even get out there.
Because you've done, yeah, if you've done your homework. You know, I think we might have answered Frank Duran's question. He said for young players, what's a good way to get them to create a better anticipation? And again, that better jump.
Yeah, and I think you're onto something right there. I think the hardest thing for the young players to understand is they get the steal sign and they know they got a bad jump and they keep going. You know, a lot of us coaches who've played before understand, you know, after you break within one or two steps, you know if you got a good jump or not. And to have the ability to shut it down or keep going is valuable. And the only way you can create that is you got to have some attempts. You know, coaches have to understand that you're going to win and lose ball games. You know, on the bases, being aggressive. So it's teaching points.
Hey, you know, the other thing is, Anthony, as a young coach coming up, we could use an example of a young coach first time in the minors. You know, you can be a little bit intimidated possibly by some of the players, or how do you gain the confidence of the players so that way you feel more comfortable when you're giving the advice?
Yeah, no, I saw it firsthand, and I first came in, and I'm going to use Tom Satara since he's on the call. He came over to the Rockies, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago with us, and he was assigned to come out there to the outfield with me, a college coach and never been in pro ball. And, you know, a couple of days out there, he was just observing everything. But what Tom did creative and what I did as well is once you show these players that you care and the passion that you have, and that you're there with no agenda and trying to help them get better, you win the players over easily, you know, and then it's downhill from there. But it's all through hard work and just doing things the right way. And I don't think there's no secret formula to that.
Now, your role as a first base coach, you come back in a dugout. What's some of the things that goes on possibly in a dugout we're not aware of that you know, helps other coaches understand how maybe your communication is with the manager or other coaches or players? What goes on in the dugout?
Yeah, it's just the constant reminders of all the tendencies that kind of go on. You know, different pitchers that you know you've done your homework on, and just relaying the message. You know, in the minor leagues especially, just the constant communication. You know, when the players start coaching themselves and talking to the dugout, like what the pitcher has, his curveball, what it looks like, you know, the velocity, the fastball, when that relates to base running in the dugout, you're onto something. You know, when there's a competition amongst a handful of guys, you know, with stolen bases and different things like that, you know, the game gets fun.
And guys and gals, you know, anytime, jump in with a question, feel free. I'm going to jump to Japan right now because I'm going to talk a little bit about Anthony's career in Japan. I know you played for the Nippon League, which is with the Yokohama Bay Stars. Explain to the coaches when you first got to Japan. You know, if anything, I think everybody should watch Mr. Baseball. I do that all the time with our kids that go to Japan on trips to, you know, for international experience. We watch Mr. Baseball because there's a lot of reality there. But talk about what it was like for you as an American the first time going to Japan.
Yeah, you know, I played a long time over here in the States, and, you know, you see a lot of young Latin players come over here and the struggles they have with the language. And, you know, when I went over to Japan, it hit home of, you know, I'm that guy right now, you know, language and everything else and communicating. And the last thing was probably the baseball, you know, and I total respect for Japan and the way they play the game and the way they respect the elders. But not only that, just the youth over there and the passion they have for the game is unbelievable. And I enjoyed my time over there. As a young kid, I think I went over there maybe a little too early in my career, but a lot of life learning lessons over there for myself, for sure.
What was the toughest thing to deal with in Japan?
It was just adjusting to, you know, the pitching, the timing, you know, with the different, you know, mechanics that their pitchers have, you know, pausing and, you know, the way they pitch you. And I was over there, you know, getting a bonus for every home run I hit, every stolen base I had. So when you start playing the game for money a little bit, instead of just playing it, you know, the way you know how, things change. And yeah. We all know it's, you can't just walk up there and try to hit a home run every time because, you know, some pitchers rather walk you than give up a hit to you. So, you know, it's just life learning lessons like that.
What would you like to see when it comes to Japanese baseball, some of the things maybe you learned there that we could possibly use in the States, you know, the type of game they play or anything that they do that can help us, maybe we should change our game a little bit.
Yeah, it was funny because I was talking with Scott Brosius and Willie Randolph when we were in Japan, you know, about 4 or 5 months ago. And you watched a lot of the Asian teams when they got on base, a lot of, you know, delay steals, false breaks, just creating havoc on the base paths. A lot what we see in the minor leagues with some aggressive organizations. And, you know, I know that would carry on to the big leagues if you put pressure on certain teams and, you know, could affect the game. So it's just constantly being aggressive, finding different ways to put pressure on the defense.
And when it comes to major league games, when you're talking about strategy in the big leagues, what would you like to see? Because, you know, right now you're seeing a lot of home runs. You know, I'm not sure if you look at the statistics with teams that have gone to the World Series in the last 3-4 years, I saw a lot of balls hit the other way. I saw a lot, you know, spreading the ball around. What game do you like? You think we should be, you know, developing more?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. It all depends on the organization and the type of players they have on that big league team. You know, the identity they have. Some teams, you know, have a little more freedom because they have those type of players, and others, you know, rely on a certain situation or hitting the long ball. So, like I said earlier, I would love to see a lot more athletes start to get drafted in baseball. And I think that would change the game as well.
Another thing you don't see a lot of in the big leagues, but you do in Japan, and they're excellent at it. And, you know, they'll do it any time. And I realize that the statistics go against some of this as far as scoring. But bunting, you don't see a lot of anymore in the big leagues. And unfortunately, what's happening is, at the younger levels, when you talk about some of the travel teams or even youth teams, they're not teaching the bunting because they're saying, well, it's not important because they're not going to use it when they get older. Problem is, not everybody's going to play in the big leagues.
Yeah, no, you're correct. And it's sad as a coach who's been in player development for a long time, just watching a lot of these guys like Charlie Blackman and David Dahl and some of these guys with the Rockies who have that tool, because we've worked on it for hours behind the scenes and they can probably drop one down whenever they want. So, again, it goes back to the style of play that, you know, the managers are playing. But a lot of people who don't know these kids would be shocked on how well they are at some of those tools that they do have. They just probably don't use right now.
What was the toughest thing in the Olympics when you bring a bunch of guys together? What's the hardest thing to get them prepared? Because you don't have, you know, you might only have 2 weeks, 3 weeks to prepare them. What are some of the tough things to deal with there?
I think as soon as everyone can buy in, you know, when you're playing for your country, I think that's the key. I think you got to, especially in the minor leagues and college and stuff, and everyone's playing for an individual and their numbers, they put up numbers. But for there, the numbers don't even matter. It's all about winning. And once those kids can realize that and come together, you know, things change overnight, especially in those short tournaments that we have. And it takes great motivators, like I said, from Tommy Lasorda to Willie Randolph, you know, Ernie Young, a lot of the guys, Paul Seiler, the way they, you know, they make these kids in a short time understand, you know, the value of playing for your country. It happens overnight.
You know, and what kind of make, I mean, we all know that a lot of these players that are making it to on a national team, you know, are, you know, obviously pretty good athletes, pretty good baseball players. You got to be able to produce now. You know, it can't be a prospect that's going to be producing in 2 years because you got to compete now. But what about the makeup of the player? What's that like? What are you looking for when it comes to the makeup of that individual?
Yeah, it's tough because there's so many talented guys out there. But it all goes back to those guys who just know how to play the game. guys who want to win and know how to win. You know, I had a chance to coach, Joe Adell over in Japan. I mean, young prospect that, you know, if we were playing now, he'd probably be on TV with the Angels. Mm-hmm. And to see a young high school kid like that grow overnight and understand the importance of, United States and playing as a team, it was nice to see. And I think that's going to carry on with him for a long time. You see a lot of these guys who played in the big leagues, who won World Series and other stuff like that, but you ask them about their time with USA Baseball, and it's a special time for them.
What kind of players does Anthony Sanders not like? You got a lot of picks, but what turns you off? Because, you know, it could be, you know, it doesn't matter what the level is, but there's got to be certain things that you just demand from players. And if they don't have that, that's not the player you're going to pick.
Okay? It's funny you say that because, you know, I think our scouts do a great job now of, you know, eliminating those type of players. And when I'm telling you, I probably haven't seen that player in years, just with the Rockies organization, because the quality kids that they get, and even with the Orioles, you don't see bad kids anymore getting drafted, you know, or around. I think if you're a bad seed or a bad staff member, you get weeded out really quick in this game now. So I think so for any coach who's coming up or, you know, wants to get in the game, you know, a lot of times it's not about your knowledge and all that. It's about the people, the person you are. And I think that goes a long way. And I think it's throughout baseball.
All right, we got about 5 minutes left, so if you got a question, please ask. I just want to kind of go towards the players and the selection of players a little bit. When it comes to picking players, you know, that you like, you know, I talk about their character and all that. But during games, when a player doesn't do something that necessarily fits the culture of your club, you know, it could be not hustling, it could be all kinds of things. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think you got to try to find some creative ways how to discipline these kids now. You know, some of these kids now are making way more money than the coaches are, so finding them isn't the answer anymore. I think over the time that I've been coaching, when you take away playing time, I think that hits home for a lot of these kids. You know, especially you today, go in there and turn off the internet in the clubhouse one day, then you'll get some results. Get off their phones. But, you know, the type of players that I like, you know, guys who are very versatile. And the game has changed to where, you know, guys who can play a lot of different positions are valuable to a lot of managers. And I've seen it time and time again. Those are the guys who end up sticking around. You know, guys who can, you know, go out to center field, guys who can play short and second, guys who, like you said, can bunt and do a lot of little things to keep them alive in the game.
With your kids, what are you constantly reminding them about in order to make sure that they can be the best player they can be? What are you, so things you have to constantly remind them about?
I just try to help them stay most athletic as possible. And I don't have no problem creating competition in this household with the three boys. So yeah. Whatever, it's out in the street or in the cage or playing home run derby, that competition is always there. But, they love the game. They respect the game. They understand that, you know, just because dad's coaching and had a chance to make it, that their road is going to be tough. And they see the benefits of it as well. And you know, I got really good kids and a good wife and family as well.
You know, Patrick's got a great question from all the way from Switzerland. He's been on a lot. He says, is there a big difference between Japan and pretty much all other countries when it comes to the culture, mental approach, strength, and even discipline?
I don't think it's any different other than I think in Japan, one thing I really noticed is just how the younger kids really respect the older guys, to where here in the States, you know, sometimes you get a young prospect who doesn't have to go through that as much. You know, he's accepted right away because of maybe the status and or his talent level. But in Japan, I think it's a little bit different as far as that goes. But as far as the game and stuff, and they have passion for the game. They play the game the right way. I think just maybe the strength factor a little bit.
Let's take it with the last one here, Anthony. This has been great. Really appreciate your time. I know you've been on a lot of Zoom calls with your manager, coaches, and front office people. I think everybody's been on Zoom. Zoom's been the most popular thing in the world right now. We should have bought stock in Zoom before anything started. because I think it multiplied by 10. But let's take the younger game. At the youth levels, the younger travel teams, the all the different things at the young levels, what would you like to see changed that maybe can help development more? Because we might be heading in a so-so direction and you want to make that change to help our kids.
Yeah, I just think the financial part of it, I would love to see a bunch of coaches give back to some of these kids and some of these leagues and tournaments. The cost is outrageous for these kids. And there's a lot of, you know, opportunity they say that's out there for some of these kids, and they go to big tournaments and, you know, no one's even there. So just get back to playing even Little League, which is really important, the value of Little League compared to club ball, and just all the good coaches who are out there just doing things the right way, you know, and giving back to these kids and creating more games, more opportunity for these kids to play without having to showcase.
You know, and that reminds me, I wanted to end, but I think this is an important topic. Here in Chicago, we've got the White Sox who do a great job with this. You know, a lot of African-American players at the young levels, you know, aren't playing the game as much. They are in Chicago now, and you see them in the College World Series of Michigan because they've taken the time to take the money out of there because it's cost way too much for a lot of these kids to play. And there's a lot of great athletes, and the White Sox do a great job. So I think that's important. The giving back at those levels are very important.
Yeah, no, that's huge. And I know Major League Baseball has done a good job with the Breakthrough Series and Hank Aaron and all that. And my kid's been part of that. So as long as we keep doing little things like that and keep spreading the word, I think things will get back. But I would love to see Little League get back to what it used to be when I was a little leaguer.
All right, last message to coaches, players, and parents in the U.S. and around the world. Anything you want to say to kind of, you know, give them some advice if they're going to be coaching, how to handle, you know, the coaching experience?
Yeah, I mean, the final thing I would just say with anybody is, you know, just remember it's a kid's game, and just keep it fun. In all the drills and, you know, practices you guys have, just keep it fun for the kids, keep the competition, and you know, some of these kids, and I've learned on an early age is coaching that some of these kids who get drafted, their goal isn't to play in the big league. Some kids, their goals are just to play pro ball, you know, so different standards for everybody and, you know, just enjoy what you do.
Fantastic. Anthony, got to thank you, man. I really appreciate being on today.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, that's Anthony Sanders, Baltimore Orioles first base coach, Olympic gold medal coach with USA Baseball. I got to thank him. Thank our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group, and especially thank our listeners in the U.S. and around the world, live on Facebook, on Twitter, also on Zoom. Thanks, everybody. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, tomorrow, 1 o'clock Central Time, excuse me, we have Nino Gerentano, the head coach, 22 years with the University of San Francisco. And also at 7 p.m., we're going into Korean baseball with one of the pitching coordinators in Korea. We're going to be talking about Korean baseball and their development. Again, special thanks to Anthony. Thank everybody. Don't forget, this is a show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Stay safe today. We'll see you on the baseball field very soon.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.